You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Jason gives a couple of stories for you on my CFL recollections, because we've talked about why young quarterbacks who are great in college opt to make a position change now and to try it in the NFL at a new position, which would be typically a wide receiver, or like Denard Robinson. Remember the game he had against the Browns last year?
Oh,
in Jacksonville.
God. That guy
he almost broke the rushing record that day in the NFL.
That was such a
miserable
experience.
And I'll tell you what,
experience.
I wanted to go down and tie his shoelaces to slow him down. Was that not unbelievable?
Out of nowhere.
He took my voice away that day. He literally took my voice away.
Yes, he did.
All right, I want to tell you, when I was a kid, I went to Bobby Orr's hockey camp. And it was up in Orillia, Ontario. And so you'd skate and play hockey all day, and at night you would sit in your dorm with the other guys in the dorm, the other campers, and I would listen to the Toronto Argonauts game on the radio with Joe Theismann as the quarterback, and he was fantastic up there. And, of course, then came here and became a Hall of Famer. Do you remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Now, the other point I wanted to tell you is that when I was a young Cub reporter up in Burlington, Vermont, I would go. Burlington, Vermont was only 55, 60 minutes drive to Montreal, and I would go up and cover the Montreal Alouettes when Vince Ferragamo was their quarterback,
wow,
and Tom Cousineau was the big get-it linebacker, but Ferragamo went up there and played. So, I mean, there were some guys that went to the CFL and then came down here and made it, but I don't see that happening quite as much.
No, it's – and maybe it's because rosters aren't as big. There's so many.
Yeah.
There's such a large pool of free agents and undrafted kids.
And might it be the other thing is that these guys are now coming out of offenses in college that are spread offenses anyway, and they're really a running back taking a shotgun snap, and they have some passing ability. And so, I mean, you know, in college, they're athletic enough to play in the spread and, you know, take the shotgun snap, and a lot of times they can put it on their hip and they can run or they can throw the ball. And so now they say, well, listen, I'm an athlete. I can either be a running back or I can be a wide receiver in the NFL, because basically that's what I was doing in college 50% of the time.
Yeah, and do NFL, you know, are NFL coaches looking at that and going, I have to get enough guys out of the mindset of that open look shotgun.
Absolutely.
That I can't deal with additional guys like
That's why I don't think a lot of those guys were drafted high this year, is that the spread offense in college, I mean, teams run a little bit of the spread in the NFL, but not a lot. I mean, Chip Kelly definitely will. And maybe Seattle tries it a little bit with Russell Wilson, but not, you know, even that situation, they'll run a conventional offense. But I think that's why some of these quarterbacks, you know, that come out of Baylor and those places really sat a long time before they finally got picked, because you need these quarterbacks to come out of a pro system. You need to come out of Stanford. You need to come out of Alabama. If you have a decent guy in Alabama.
You know, and I'm looking at there was a vine out earlier from Daniel Jeremiah.
Yeah.
So they're making such a big deal, this Penn State kid, Christian Hackenberg.
Yeah.
And saying, well, he's going to be one of the top quarterbacks coming out next year's class. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy's never done anything at Penn State. Penn State hasn't beaten anybody, but they're like, well, it's an NFL offense.
It was the NFL offense that Bill O'Brien brought in there, and that's why that kid went there, is because he was going to get coached by Bill O'Brien, who at that time had left New England to take that job. And so the kid did play. Now, I think James Franklin is leaning a little bit more towards spreading that out a little bit. You know, the new coach.
I don't understand it.
Let's go back to the telephones right now. Pete is in Warren. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Jimmy. Firstly, I love hearing you on the radio.
Thank you.
And I've got two questions or comments on things that you've talked about today.
Good.
And the first is, I'd like to know if there's any way that we can remove the 1.5 second, 2 second, 3 second gap between the radio and the television. I cannot stand the television commenters. I mean that truly. I very often watch a full game of the Browns with the sound off, because these guys are always only commenting on the big name teams, mm-hmm. and sometimes that hasn't been us.
All right, now don't hang up. Don't hang up. Okay. All right. The guy to ask here is Jason Kipps. Jason, how do you do that? Because I mean, not just Pete, but a lot of people will come up and ask Doug and I.
Oh yeah.
You know, and they ask you, I'm sure. Hey, how do you get rid of that delay? Is it doable? No.
It is. We've talked about it, and we're having another meeting here coming up in a few weeks when everybody gets back from vacation.
Are you going to have that with top men?
Top men.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Keith Williams in between his Rizzo
good.
Negotiations.
All right. Yeah.
But, I mean, short of trying to sync up your DVR,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've heard it, and it's interesting because I hear it both ways. Some people are like, well, the radio's ahead of the TV.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, there's nothing I can do for you in that case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but the TV to the radio, sure. I mean, you could try to sync it up with your remote control DVR.
All
I mean, I've done that before, but the radio call being ahead, it's just TV is on such a delay now, and they're so terrified of someone saying something or doing something.
Right, that's a good point.
And the whole FCC, there's not a whole lot you can do with that.
Okay, so that's the mechanics of it, Pete.
Maybe we need to get you onto the television.
Yeah, they've tried that.
Right, I'm a big fan of him in the booth with me.
I am too. Yeah, I have a thought about that too. I want to say, go ahead, Pete. I'm sorry.
Can I get just a quick comment on how American football overseas?
Sure.
American football has one big problem for development, because you need to develop amongst younger players. And in school age and so forth. I consider myself a football, the generic term football connoisseur. I love Australian rules football. I watch some rugby union, not so much rugby league. I watch Gaelic football and so forth. American football as a spectator sport is my favorite. I see problems with it playing, but as a spectator sport is my favorite. But the one problem that American football has is uniforms. Because consider what it costs a school, for example, to outfit a football team,
mm-hmm.
an American football team.
Right.
It's huge. When you consider that to play soccer or even rugby, you need a pair of shorts, a protector.
And a pair of shoes, right?
A pair of shoes and a T-shirt of some sort. And that, to me, is a problem that American football will always have, because you can't play without a helmet, shoulder pads, and so forth. So that's just my comment. I like the other ones anyhow, so it doesn't bother me too much. I watch American football when I'm in America.
Well,
so.
There you go. All right. Pete, thanks for the call. Thank you. Good point about the radio versus the TV and trying to sync that up. You know, Jason, I'll be with you during the preseason up in the booth all the radio preseason this year. And I got to tell you something. I that's going to be good for me, because I always worried about that going into the first game of the regular season, coming off doing the games on TV, because that's a different call that you do on TV versus when you do the game on the radio. And you'd certainly like to have a radio game, and now I'll have four under my belt before you go into opening day.
Yeah, last year it was nice.
I had that one in Washington.
Exactly,
yeah, that was
Monday
good.
Night game.
Yep,
so
you're absolutely right.
I never complain. No disrespect to Jeff Phelps or Michael Regei, because they're fantastic on the call. But, you know, just having the whole group together, you're kind of in sync. You're in rhythm when the season starts.
Let's go to Neil in Cleveland. Hi, Neil.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I had the idea for sports delay radio, and it turns out there's about five or six companies that make it.
Really?
Yes. Look up sports delay or sport delay radio, you know, on Google or whatever, and it just will delay the radio signal, which is usually 7 seconds, because as a musician, I would take a guitar delay pedal, plug it into my tuner, and then run it through the speakers, and it would sync up.
Wow, and so this is actually a product that would be available.
Yes, it's already made.
Is it expensive?
They make like a boombox type for like $50 or $70, and then a tuner that can go into your system for like $100, $120.
Okay, so you say go online, sports delay radio.
Yeah.
If they Google that.
If you Google that, you can sync it up.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for the tip.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Okay. How about that, Jason? I had never heard of that.
I've never heard of it either, but I'm going to start looking into it because we get a lot of phone calls like that during the season. A lot of emails, people constantly saying, how can I get you guys synced up?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
it's the Doug Deacon factor.
Well, that goes without saying.
I mean,
that's why I don't think we should say it. Well, I'm thinking that he's making the turn right now, going on to the back nine over at Avon Oaks. Doug Deacon right now.
They're all trying to beat the rain. Petrak was out on the golf course. He goes, hey, 2:35, I'm just about done.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, so far, and I know we kind of threw this out, and it's been a heavy, as the title of the show goes, Cleveland Browns Daily, it's amazing how people are so plugged in. But, Jason, when the Cavaliers were in that run, and certainly in the NBA Finals, when we were downtown for the home games, I mean, that was absolutely amazing. The crowds outside the queue and all around the downtown area of the district there, you know, just wanting to be part of the scene. And because I do the Browns games on the radio, I kept saying to myself, I mean, this is amazing. What would it be like downtown? I sound like I'm doing the Horseshoe Casino ad. What would it be like downtown if the Browns are playing in an AFC playoff game at home?
Or even better, I mean, the only thing you could equate the NBA Finals to would be if the Browns were in the AFC Championship. And championship week was here in Cleveland.
I remember now. Do you remember the?
Oh, yes.
Okay, the drive game,
right? Yeah.
Because that was the one here. I remember that week like it was last year, because everybody was so pumped coming off the Jets double overtime win, which was a Saturday afternoon. And though the Browns played very well at the end of the game, they had a rough day with the Jets before that and certainly looked like they were on their way to defeat. So I still think that a lot of people thought, well, the Browns' best football is coming up this week when they play Denver. But I can't even remember the days of the week that week because it was so much fun downtown. It was just amazing. Over at the old arcade, all around town, remember the monuments had orange helmets on them. I mean, every school had pep rallies for the Browns. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. And you just couldn't wait for the Broncos to touch down into Cleveland and get the game going. So I can only fast forward ahead and say, what would it be like here? Would it be like what it was a couple of weeks ago when Golden State was here and downtown was just packed? Would it even be bigger? It would be fun, though, wouldn't it, Jason?
I don't even, you know, I mean, I was in elementary school at the time.
I was at Channel 3. Yeah. I was
Now, Dave DiNatale just popped his head in and said, you got to ask Jim.
Yes.
Why were they training in Vero Beach
during the
playoff run?
Well, I'm going to tell you, very good question. They wanted to get two reasons. Number one, they wanted to get out of Cleveland because they wanted to get a good week of practice in. And they wanted to get out of – also, they realized the town was in such a frenzy, okay, that they wanted to kind of get them out of the atmosphere and then bring them back into town, okay? So they did that, and they also – they just wanted to get a good week of practice down there. And then they came back. We came back – I was down there with them. And they came back like on – we came back on New Year's Eve, actually. And the game was on a Saturday against the Jets. And so they watched the wild card game. They watched the Jets win on a Sunday afternoon down in Vero Beach at Dodger Town, and then got ready and practiced during the week. And then we flew back to Cleveland right at the tail end of the week. And they only had about a week. They only had about a day. They had a walkthrough, and then bang, they played the Jets. And those were the two reasons. So number one, it was because of the weather. And number two, it was because they just felt they were going to be so distracted by the frenzy that was Cleveland, because it was just off the charts. It was unbelievable. Now, the next year, when they lost on the fumble, they trained out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at the University of New Mexico, leading up to the Bronco game, because they wanted to get up into the altitude. So they tried every way to do it.
they trained everywhere except Cleveland.
Now, I just want to tell you another thing, how times have changed in the NFL. When you went the week of the AFC Championship game, and they're playing Denver, and it's the one here, so it's the drive game.
Yep.
Jason, I can remember being at Browns practice every day, and we were allowed to film the entire practice.
My God.
How times have changed, right?
Yeah.
And the players would finish. I can remember many times, like a defensive, the number one defense would come off the field, and Hanford Dixon would come over and go, "Hey, what's up? What's up, dog?" You know, and he'd start barking at you. I mean, the media was right out on the sideline, and you could watch the entire practice, and pretty much you could film the entire practice. They would come over occasionally and say, "Hey, we're going to do something here that we would rather not see on the news tonight," but it was unbelievable. It really was. You could
now
you watched every.
Now we get to film stretching.
You're right.
That's what we.
That's
get.
How those exercise shows started on cable TV. Is the NFL allowed you to shoot the 7 minutes of stretching?
Exactly.
It was amazing. It really was.
No, I remember that week. My second grade teacher was actually Tom Cousineau's mom, Mrs. Cousineau. So like the whole school was dressed in brown and orange every day, and. I just remember the convenient food marts each week had a Browns player poster.
Right.
It was
free. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've got all that stuff still in a box in my parents' attic.
I can remember just feeling there was no way they're going to lose this game.
Yep.
There is just no way they're going to lose this game. That stadium is going to be so difficult, so loud, so one way for the Browns. There is no way they're going to lose that game. And for 58 minutes and so, I was right.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's take a timeout, and we'll be back with more. Those are fun memories. We'll be right back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.